just another solid day in California. It's just the way that I was raised in California.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies and bricks swimming in the sea.
Welcome to another edition of the Fansmanship.com podcast, Burn the Breeze edition, alongside Nick Wynn. Actually, we're not right next to each other, but alongside Nick Wynn, I'm Owen Main, and we're here to talk some Big West basketball, some Cal Poly basketball, another week down in the conference, and things are starting to kind of come into more and more clarity every weekend we get through, Nick. And how are you doing today?
Not too bad. How are you?
You know, I am good. I'm good. This is the kind of part of the season where players might hit maybe, you know, a little bit of a wall, especially if they're guys who are new to a team, new to a level. And I'm hitting a little bit of a wall myself. We talked about how I moved before, and we're still living in kind of half of the house right now. But we should be getting the other side of the house fixed up here in the next couple of weeks. And so that's pretty exciting. And for the Big West, there are some teams that are, you know, fixing themselves up a little bit too, and some other teams that are hitting a little bit of a rough patch this past week.
Yeah, there are some teams where it seems like the house might be falling down around them, and that's a perfect segue into a tough week for your Cal Poly Mustangs, with two losses to Fullerton and Long Beach, and maybe not so much that they lost to those two teams, as we talked about last week, that wasn't necessarily out of the realm of possibilities. They were definitely not favored in either one of those games. But the way that Cal Poly lost was pretty disappointing. They were never really in either one of those games. Long Beach and Fullerton are two teams that are not fantastic defensively, and Cal Poly just could do absolutely nothing on offense against either one of those teams. So, yeah. For all the optimism that we might have had last week with Cal Poly going 2-0, kind of back to square one with Cal Poly, and I think and agree. Tell me if you disagree, but I think we still feel like Cal Poly can make the tournament, but maybe not as optimistic as we were last week.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at this team, and I see a few trends. One is, at this point, you know, they haven't won any road games in conference, and they only have, I think, two more. So they've played their own six, I think, on the road so far in conference, with three home games staring them in the face. So I guess that's a positive piece of the puzzle, to be alliterative a little bit. And so that's definitely an interesting thing that I see. You know, the other thing is, going into these games, as much as they were able to kind of come back and get in that Fullerton game and send it to overtime at home, I don't feel like Fullerton is a good matchup for Cal Poly, and you saw why in the Fullerton game, as the Titans went to a 1-3-1 with Kyle Allman at the top, and there were whole possessions where Cal Poly couldn't get the ball down past the top of the key extended, or the free throw line extended for sure, and they either turned it over or threw like a lob, little, you know, light pass trying to get over the defense. And Fullerton's just too athletic and too fast in that 1-3-1. You know, they play the 1-3-1 probably like Joe Calero would like his guys to play the 1-3-1.
No, absolutely.
On some level. And it's that, to me, was one of the biggest disappointments, just because of the concept that this is a defense that this team runs. This team practices this defense. They should know where its weaknesses are. They should know how to break it down and attack it. And yet they weren't able to do anything for a whole probably 10-minute stretch there at the end of the first half, it seemed like. I think I tweeted that kind of my most extreme tweet of the night was that, you know, this game felt like I wanted to throw my computer across the room on multiple possessions as I was watching it. And, you know, of course, we can see these possessions in wonderful quality because of the ESPN3 or the Prime Ticket feed that we get. But yeah, I mean, it was not a pretty picture against Fullerton. Certainly, it's probably a team that the Mustangs thought that they could compete against a little bit better than they did. And then we saw the first Long Beach game at home, and this Long Beach game wasn't a lot different. Cal Poly went there. You know, they muddied it up, as I kind of thought that they would early in the game. They were able to kind of make it a defensive game and keep themselves in it. It's just that they haven't been able to consistently shoot well on the road, and they haven't been able to kind of overcome a little bit of adversity when it comes to going on the road and maybe not shooting well and being able to pick yourself up. I really feel like this is a Cal Poly team that you can kind of tell sometimes the first 5 to 10 minutes of the game how the next 30 minutes of the game are going to go. And I don't think that's not necessarily like a compliment, right? But it is something that I see is that, you know, a lot of the time, and the Fullerton game's actually, the first Fullerton game at home is an exception to this, but a lot of the time you can tell how's Cal Poly going to fare tonight just generally based on how they do in the first half, the first couple, you know, the first 5 minutes maybe of the game. You see a couple shots fall and you say, okay, these guys are going to have confidence tonight. Anything could happen. But if you see them start the game, you know, 2 for 12 from the field, then there's not a lot of coming back from that for this team. And it's something that I don't know what the solution is to that, but it's definitely something that I see in terms of guys just deciding, okay, it's a bad night. I'm gonna, you know, it's gonna be a, you know, and trying to either force their way out of it or go completely the opposite direction, kind of go dark.
Because we've talked about. I mean, this is something we've talked about obviously all season, that unfortunately Cal Poly, they don't have a lot of other tricks in their bag. Like you said, if those shots aren't falling, it's not like other teams where they can talk about, well, you know, we'll just get the ball inside and we'll get to the line. Cal Poly doesn't do that. We'll rebound the heck out of the ball and get some easy second chances. They don't do that. We'll create a lot of turnovers and maybe get some easy buckets on the other end. They don't do that. So when you combine all of that also with the fact that they don't exactly play lockdown defense either, if those shots don't fall, like you said, in the first 5 or 10 minutes, you kind of know how the game's going to go.
And all that other stuff notwithstanding, you know, if it was a team that, and I could be wrong about this, this could be something that I just perceive but isn't actually the case. I'll grant that. But the feeling I usually get isn't that, hey, we shot really badly in the first half, we're going to shoot great in the second half. You know what I mean? Which is kind of what you need if you're a team that's that dependent on the 3-point shot or an outside shooting in general, is kind of a feeling in that way. And a lot of their shooters are streaky shooters, but they're kind of game to game streaky shooters, not quarter to quarter streaky shooters, if that makes sense. So like,
no, sure.
If Kuba makes, you know, 2 of his first 3, he's almost certainly going to make 5 of 7. You know what I mean? Like if he gets 7 shots, you know, it's not that, you know, Vic's going to make 3 in a row to start the game and, you know, and then miss 4 in a row. Not usually the case. You know, these are guys who, once they get going in a game, generally keep whatever direction they're going. And I guess for better or for worse, right? Because in games where they're hot, they can stay hot. But being able to shoot themselves out of a mini slump in a game is something that I'll be looking for, especially with these 3 home games, being able to kind of have a little bit more consistency in that way, getting those shots that they want to get against some teams that are interesting in terms of Cal Poly, you know, should be able to get some interesting and different shots, having seen those teams once before and have some kind of schemes that are going to work that way. Of course, we have UC Davis coming in here to Mott on Thursday night. That'll be at 7 o'clock. And then UC Irvine on Saturday night. And so you have 2 of the best, probably 3 teams in the conference right now who are going to be coming in. And the thing about them both is that they're right in front of them. I mean, Cal Poly got waxed in Davis, but they haven't had Chima Moneki for a few weeks. UC Irvine was a game that they were in for a while and is a team that they should be able to scheme against in some level. We'll see if that's actually the case. I wanted to get your impressions about both of those teams and kind of how they've been faring over the last week.
Well, yeah, it's a tale of two stories with both of them, right? Because obviously after Moneki got suspended, Davis had that big time win and Santa Barbara or Long Beach.
TJ Shorts. Overtime.
Yeah, TJ Shorts making that crazy shot, but then started to come back over the last week, and you knew that eventually not having Moneki was going to hurt them.
Not having the player of the year, right? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So so much of their stuff goes through them. So as good as TJ Shorts is and Siler Schneider can be from game to game, that Not having Maneki is a big loss for them. So it's one of those things where, you know, I feel like 2 weeks ago before that suspension came out, you felt like Davis was probably the better of those two teams. And now Irvine's been playing really well in conference. Their defense has just been amazing. They seem like the, things are starting to kind of come together for some of the younger guys on that team. So I would say right now Irvine's probably the better team of those two, that I think Pauly has a better chance, like you said, of if they're going to win one of those two games, and again, they're not going to be favored in either one of them, even though they're at home. But
right.
If they're going to win one of those two games, my bet's on the Davis game right now, which I don't think I would have made that case 2 weeks ago.
Right.
So
yeah, with Garrison Good and Chima Moneki down low, definitely a tough matchup for these Mustangs.
Well, and both of those teams are fairly similar in terms of they both want to grind you down.
Right.
They're both not any kind of. They don't have that explosiveness offensively that Santa Barbara does, or that even, you know, Fullerton and Long Beach kind of do. So it's going to be a similar game, I think, for both. But obviously the big factor would be Maneki not being there in the middle for Davis, with Irvine still having Tommy Rutherford and those other guys that they can work in through the middle. So,
yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Irvine's size in person. That's one thing that, you know, Irvine always impresses me with, and I'm sure it'll be impressive again. But Irvine, I don't think I saw them at home last year. I think I missed that game. I was traveling for work or something. But I'm excited to see that this upcoming week. And Irvine's been playing really good. I know they were on your radar as kind of low-key up-and-comer. How did they do this past week?
Well, they beat Northridge and Riverside, which obviously you know, nobody gets super surprised about. But they beat them fairly handily. They're now up to five wins in a row. And then, you know, a loss against Santa Barbara, but with that loss, they're at a 7 out of 8 that they've won so far. So things are really starting to kind of come together for them. And again, it's not necessarily been on the offensive side. They're doing just enough offensively to kind of win games.
Right.
But that defense is so tough. And just denying people shots.
Yeah.
They do a fairly good job, on the boards and creating turnovers, but really, it's just about making sure that you're going to take a lot of poor shots. So they're holding opponents to under 44% from two, which is incredible for a mid-major team.
Yeah.
And, you know, as tall as they are, it's not like it's not the Irvine teams of years past. They're not, you know, trotting out Mamadou and those guys.
Right.
So,
they're just kind of like they're well-sized for the Big West. They're tall for the Big West. They're probably average size for like a Pac-12 team or something, but they also have tough guys. They have kind of lunch pail guys like Rutherford, Galloway, etc. Guys who are gonna make life hard for you for 40 minutes. And it's interesting that they beat CSUN and Riverside, because those were the two teams that Hawaii played this last week as well. And Hawaii, hosting, you know, two of the worst teams in conference, lost to both of those teams on the island, which is super unusual. I don't know what Joe Calero and Pauly did to him week before last, but something was unlocked with this Hawaii team. I'm not sure what it was, but man, they did not look good in a pair of losses. Trying to figure out what's going on there with Aron Ganot's team, which with those two losses, basically, you know, kicks them down. We've been talking about a top six. Maybe with those two losses, there's only a top five, then Hawaii, then kind of a bottom three, if you want to think of it that way. Those bottom three are now kind of chomping at the bit maybe to get to Hawaii. I think Hawaii is still only a game behind or in front of Cal Poly in the conference standings.
Yeah, and they, on the flip side of Irvine, they've lost five in a row now.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to Irvine on Thursday, which obviously is not going to be an easy game by any measure.
No.
It's probably a game they're going to lose. So it really could come down to they have an away game on Saturday at Riverside. And if they lose those two games, and all, like you said, all of a sudden you're starting to talk about Hawaii being in that mix for, maybe not necessarily missing the tournament, because they have four wins now, which is probably going to be close to good enough to making the tournament. But
yeah
really being in the mix for that maybe 7 or 8 seed, which is kind of crazy given that at one point we thought maybe they were one of the best teams in the conference. So,
yeah, they were in first place after like 3 weeks, I think.
Yeah, they had that big win at home against Santa Barbara, obviously the win against Cal Poly. So, things seemed like they were starting to click for them. And then it was weird, even though, you know, at the start of that five-game losing streak, there was weird stuff where Ganot was benching guys and kind of switched up his rotation. He had a couple guys kind of get hurt. Steptow got hurt. So it's been kind of weird on the island. And from what I understand, obviously, you know, I haven't lived there. You haven't lived there. But from what I understand, Hawaii is a much different animal when it comes to speculation and gossip and that kind of thing, because they're the only show in town, you know. So there's so many people on that island that actually follow that team like an NBA team, that when things start to go south, it can affect those guys a lot more than it can be a guy that's on campus at Cal Poly or a guy that's on campus at Irvine.
Right.
When, you know, you're the lead story on the 11 o'clock news sports segment every night.
Yeah. So. The microscope is there for sure. As we know, because, you know, it's one of the best covered teams when you look at Brian McGinnis and his coverage in the Star Advertiser and other places out there. You know, you can find a lot of
good info. Watch the games on this Big West stream. They've got four guys on their pregame and postgame show, which is absurd. So
it's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But
speaking of pre and postgame shows, I wanted to ask you, did you see any of the social media with this set for the Big West kind of studio show that they're working on?
Yeah, and that's kind of cool. You know, it's what's neat is that with this, we've talked in the past about them establishing that ESPN3 presence, which is kind of cool. And that now it seems like they have a rotating cast of kind of talent and commentators who can speak really honestly and knowledgeably about the Big West, which is kind of cool. I know, you know, in years past, when the Big West would get the random one or two games on ESPN or one or two games on Fox Sports,
right?
You got the feeling that the commentators really didn't know that much about the conference, and that's definitely changed now with the league, where there's definitely a group of guys, Trent Rush, as we've talked about, Richie Schuler coined one of the best nicknames. Speaking of Irvine, calling Tommy Rutherford the Roomba.
The Roomba,
but he cleans up fantastic. The class. But there's some guys that that are really knowledgeable about the Big West. They can kind of rotate into that bit. Mm-hmm. So, props to the conference. That's a pretty cool thing. And more coverage for the Big West is always fantastic.
Yeah, Olivia Phelps and Courtney Sweet kind of know what they're doing there,
and they're both fantastic. Yeah. And Rashawn Haylock, who's done a lot of stuff, good stuff with Fox Sports. So.
Yep.
Even Corey Maggette, when he on the Fox games, you can tell Corey Maggette really spends his time studying the Big West. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, you know, Maggette kind of goes hot and cold in terms of people's reactions, but I always kind of enjoy his takes and his ideas when it comes to games from a player's perspective and from a perspective of somebody who's been there before at kind of a higher stage and is looking at these guys, and it's almost like he's imparting wisdom as the games are going on. Which is kind of from a kind of a real professional standpoint. I mean, he went to Duke, but I don't think he was there for very long. And you know, he's definitely got a professional mindset about everything. So it's kind of interesting to hear him talk about a mid-major game, whatever that game is in the Big West. So Hawaii was a loser this past week. Irvine, you know, obviously played the same teams as Hawaii, but beat them both, the two bottom teams of the Big West at the time. And Cal Poly now is de facto eighth place. Once again, after CSUN got the win against Hawaii, they came up and tied Cal Poly, and of course CSUN has the head-to-head win. Riverside still, I think, two games behind them, behind both teams now, I guess, for eighth place. And I think those two teams play each other this upcoming week as well, so that should be interesting, you know, because somebody's gonna have another win. One of those teams is gonna have another win, kind of nipping at Cal Poly's heels, or maybe going ahead of them by a game with CSUN coming to play a week, I think a week from Wednesday or a week from Thursday. Cal Poly has a three-game homestand right now. And so who else caught your eye? I guess the other thing I was going to mention is you talked about Davis losing, but they hadn't lost, I don't think, a home game in like over a year, maybe a couple years. I mean, they were I think they went undefeated at home last year. They might have gone undefeated at home the year before that. You know, they don't lose too much up at the pavilion there, and they lost two games in conference in a weekend. And Fullerton, I think, is a team that kind of, you know, was able to flex their muscles, I guess, a little bit too. Kyle Allman and Khalil Ahmad, Ahmad was the player of the week. Those two guys, you know, were able to kind of come off the Cal Poly game, and get up to Davis and flex, you know, flex their muscles up there. Allman hit a nice pull-up jumper, and Ahmad and Jackson Rowe continue to be, you know, very good you know, very good feature players for them as well. And Fullerton, you know, they're not going to be an easy out. I was thinking about this. There's probably at least five teams that would be in the second round of the conference tournament in any other year. And at least one of those teams isn't going to be, Nick, upcoming season. You know, when you break down Long Beach, Fullerton, man, a Long Beach Fullerton first round game. Can you imagine what that would be like late night at the Honda Center on Thursday night?
Yeah, no, that's going to be an exciting game. And I think we've gotten to the point with those two teams, especially, that I don't feel like either one of those teams, I'd be shocked if either one of those teams win the league, but they're both two teams that I could easily see winning three games in Anaheim.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
You're not going to want to play either one of those teams. They both have talent enough that they can make it really difficult for a Santa Barbara or for an Irvine or a Davis. But yeah, they're going to be kind of the spoilers, I think, when we get to the tournament. I just don't think they have enough to beat those teams at the top in terms of the regular season.
Right.
But man, they're going to be tough in the tournament. Yeah. And I think because they can both put points on the board and they both have that kind of physical talent. That's going to be the big thing that's going to give them a chance in Anaheim.
And both of them are very, very disciplined. You know, those are two programs where I guess I don't always picture discipline as the key operative, but this season they both seem to be pretty disciplined. They both are able to follow game plans and they're both able to kind of lock down at key times in games. There are some moments where they turn the ball over, I guess, on both sides. And that's how actually Cal Poly got back into that Fullerton game. But in general, both of those teams, you know, are pretty well coached and they're able to kind of follow a plan and execute it. And I don't want to play either of those teams. If I earn the top seed in my second round game, is freaking against one of those guys. It's like,
yeah,
I mean, it's very unusual in that way, I guess, for a Big West to have that many very, very scary teams. And I do feel like it really does this season. All right, let's move on just real quick. A couple of news and notes before we get to Nick's really neato thing. For those of you who are Cal Poly fans, and I don't know how much we're going to get into baseball. I'd imagine we'll keep this going during baseball season. A baseball series is an easy thing to talk about and
sure.
To recap. And Bagot Stadium was kind of shown off for the first time this season, and it's still in full construction form. there are girders and beams up to support the permanent bleachers that are going to go up behind the bowl seating that's at Bagot Stadium right now. But the alumni game happened on Saturday. And I'll just say real quick, Nick, if the freshmen are going to hit and play like they hit and play against the alumni with Darren Nelson pitching four really good innings against guys who are major league hitters or at least professional hitters at this point, and then followed up by a Blake Wagenseller homer as he's a DH and looks like a grown man, along with, I think, a couple of other freshmen who hit doubles in that game, Cole Cabrera and I can't remember the other guy's name.
Tate.
Yeah. How can I forget Tate? He played for the Blues this last summer. So, yeah, I mean, you know, if the freshmen are going to play like they played, and I'm sure the freshmen are going to have ups and downs, but you know what you're going to get from Kyle Marincons. You know what you're going to get from Nick Meyer. You know what you're going to get from Alex McKenna in terms of an up-the-middle group. Scott Ogren can hit. Bradley Beasley can hit. You know, this is a team that has a pretty deep lineup if guys can play up to their potential. And I don't think guys are going to have to go too far outside of their comfort zone in order to score runs for this team. I'm just really interested to see how the pitching fares and holds up or whether and how it fares and holds up as the season goes on with Michael Clark, et cetera. Another thing, you know, and obviously, you know, you'll see whether he's in the lineup or not, but I saw Elijah Skips with his arm in a sling too. So that was no good. And I'll have to figure out what's going on there. But man, Wagenseller hitting that homer really set, you know, he really goes, oh man, okay. If, you know, if we have some freshmen with some pop at Cal Poly this season, it's going to be a fun one. So I just wanted to
make a big difference.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention that in terms of the alumni game. It's always fun to see Bud Norris coaching third base. Mitch Haniger was there. Reed Riley was there. You know, a lot of those guys from that regional team, you realize how stacked that team really was when see all those guys come back. And you see Van Gansen and Torres wasn't even there, but you know you see like Van Gansen and Bloomquist and Hu and Matthias was there in the dugout along with like Reed Riley, Matt Imhoff was in the dugout hanging out. You know you had all these guys who were pretty awesome. Joey Wagman from the year before that threw an inning or two. That was cool to see. You always know him by his hair. You know, it's just a fun day when you're out there seeing. And they were literally jackhammering during the alumni game, getting things ready because they're trying to get that stadium and those bleachers prepared for the home opener in March. So they have about 3 weeks, and it'll be really interesting to go back in 3 weeks and see just exactly how much they're able to get done in that amount of time. They're working on the weekends and efforting it. So let's see how they do.
Yeah.
So what's Nick's Neato Burrito stat of the week?
Well, and let's talk about this with some brief Cal Poly news. Unfortunately, okay. that we will never see our friend Paulo Cruz from San Diego State.
No.
Right? Paulo
he
was
grew up
Paulo?
In, he grew up in San Diego. He was a high school teammate of Khalil Jenkins in high school on the basketball team. And then he was at Arizona, actually. Which is funny because he was there with Pasternak, right? So it's kind of funny to think about.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yes. And so unfortunately, he is no longer on the team, which is sad. But again, he never actually ended up playing for Cal Poly. He was a walk-on. So, but it did get me thinking because he was a transfer from a different program. And we've talked a lot about transfers and the impacts that they've made in the Big West. this year and pretty much every year, but especially this year with a lot of the top name players in the league being Division I transfers.
Yeah, and at Cal Poly too, since Calero's been there, yeah.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So I went back and I looked up every Division I transfer on the Big West roster right now. There are 17.
Wow.
Division I transfers. Mm-hmm. Now that does not include players who may have gone to Division I originally and then gone to a JC and ended up at a Big West school.
Okay.
Colin Russell, who plays for UC Davis, started at Portland and went to a JC. I think there may be a couple of others, but I'm not counting those. So it's just the 17. 17 players from 16 different schools. There is one school that has two transfers. That will be your bonus question. But I'm not going to ask you for the 16 different schools because that's pretty complicated and that's very tough.
Uh-huh.
But what I am going to ask you to name, of those 16 schools, those 16 schools were in 10 different conferences.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like you to name the 10 different conferences that have transferred players to the Big West this year.
Okay.
That are on Big West rosters this year.
So on Cal Poly,
Not playing because they're sitting out a year.
Reggie Theus Jr. was in the ACC, I think, at North Carolina State, maybe.
No, you're close, though. He was in the Carolinas.
Was he at South Carolina in the SEC? Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
And we know that Luke Meikle was in the West Coast Conference. We know that Josh Martin was in the Big Ten. We know that there's almost definitely somebody from the Pac-12.
Correct.
Because we're there. I would also imagine there's somebody from the Mountain West Conference. I think there's somebody from Nevada at Fullerton, maybe, right?
Leland King.
Yeah, Leland King. Sorry.
And again, I also need to make a caveat. I'm only counting guys who transferred the school they transferred from because, as we've discussed before, Leland King's one of the rare college guys because he went to Brown and then Nevada, and now he's doing the graduate transfer thing.
So you're not counting the Ivy League. Right.
So the Brown does not count.
But is there somebody else from the Ivy League as well?
There is nobody from the Ivy League.
Okay. Did I get the Mountain West already, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 conferences.
5 out of 10 so far?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go to the Big Sky.
The Big Sky has not actually sent somebody to the Big West.
Okay. I was thinking, just West Coast conferences.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And you kind of poo-pooed my ACC thing, so I'm going to stay away from
it. And I did that. I will tell you, there is an ACC player.
There is.
So
who is that?
It wasn't Reggie Theus Jr., but there is somebody from the ACC.
Oh, is that a UCSB player?
No. And in fact, we talked about him previously. Idi Diallo, your Dwight Howard lookalike, went
number
to Boston 12
College. For UC Riverside. Okay, great.
Yes.
Is there somebody from the Big East? I think there is.
There is somebody from the Big East. Yes.
Yeah. And
that would be the Filipino phenom Kobe Porras.
Yeah.
Who went to Creighton?
Has he been playing for CSUN, or does he not playing this year?
I think this is his sit out year.
Okay. Yeah, I remember thinking That was one of the reasons why I thought CSUN could be better, but obviously they're not. He was like really famous when he was younger, huh? I feel like there's something he did with Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, he's very well followed in the Philippines, from what I understand. Yeah.
That's me just buying time.
Yes, I have free lunch.
So like, how many is that? Seven?
I need three more.
Okay.
The hint I'll give you for at least one of them is to think about the splits in terms of college football. We talk about there's two different – there's a split of two in college football in terms of the conferences.
Right, right. There's a split of two, you say?
Yeah, there's the group of five, and then there's also the power five. You've gotten four of the Power Five conferences.
Is there one from everybody in all the Power Five?
There is. Now, do you know the other Power Five conference?
Yeah, the Big Ten. I didn't say, did I?
Yes, the Big Ten.
Oh, I said Josh Barton.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, you had the Big Ten. You have the Big Ten.
Big 12.
I kind of get that away from that. Yes, the Big 12.
Yeah.
Linnick Schreiner from Northridge also went to TCU in the Big 12. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Got it.
So now we've got two more. I would say they're kind of in between high major and mid major. One of the interesting things is one of them.
Conference USA?
The Conference USA is number nine. So you've got that. Now, the one that you're missing actually has two players from this conference.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. You said it's in between a mid major and a power?
Yeah, I'd say for basketball, it's almost a high major conference.
Is it the conference that Temple is in?
Is Temple in this conference basketball? I believe they are actually.
Yeah, it's a conference with St. John's? No, St. John's Big East, right? But
yeah,
it's a conference it's the Atlantic 10.
It is the Atlantic 10. Yeah. Yes, that is correct.
Yeah.
So just to go through it, of course, we have Luke Meikle from Gonzaga, the West Coast, Josh Martin from Minnesota, the Big Ten. Northridge has four guys. Schreiner, we talked about. Powers, we talked about. The Junior, we talked about. Anthony Swan went to George Washington, which is in the A-10. Long Beach has Gabe Levin from the West Coast Conference. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, we forgot to do the bonus.
What was the bonus?
Can you name the one school that's produced two Big West transfers? Again, I kind of gave it away there, but
you kind of gave it away there. Did you?
Yeah.
Is it Pepperdine?
No, but you're close because Levin, Pepperdine has a great one.
Levin went with his buddy, I think, Gabe Faust from Pepperdine, and Faust left, I guess, last year, right?
Levin was from Loyola Marymount.
Oh, that's right.
But there's another second transfer, and this is how I almost kind of gave it away. The second transfer on Long Beach's roster is from the school that produced two. This might be kind of tough because I don't think of him as being a transfer, but he did transfer.
Is it like USAF or one of those guys?
No, USAF might have been a JC guy. No, it's actually Brian Alberts transferred from Gonzaga, like Luke Meikle. Oh. Yeah, so they never actually played together.
And of course, you have your Gonzaga Dan Munson connection there as well.
Exactly, that's true as well. Yeah. Davis has three: Stefan Gonzalez, who transferred from St. Mary's, who's sitting out this year. Matt Neufeld from St. Louis in the A-10. AJ John. AJ John was from Pepperdine, so I was incorrect, but there is a Pepperdine guy.
Yeah.
Irvine has Elston Jones from Utah State.
Pepperdine's firing their coach again.
Yeah, which it was kind of crazy. Right, that just came out today. Yeah. So Marty Wilson, who's a lifer there, was a alumni and all that kind of stuff, but did not have a very good record. And Pepperdine has money, so that's going to make it difficult. But Chance Murray from Riverside and Edie Diallo from Riverside are those two. Santa Barbara has Leland King and Marcus Jackson. And in Hawaii has Jack Purchase, who's our SEC guy from Auburn. Fullerton does not have a Division I transfer. They're the only school that does not have a Division I transfer. So.
You know, it's funny because I interviewed a bunch of coaches at the beginning of the season, maybe two or three years ago. And one of them was Dedrick Taylor, and I was just kind of talking to him in general about transfers. And he's like, I think the transfer game sucks. You know, he's basically like, and this was, you know, at the time they had Trey Coggins and they had, you know, a couple of guys who were transfers from different places, but yeah. You could kind of see where he was going with it. 'Cause he said, you know, guys, you know, coaches aren't loyal, guys aren't loyal, you know, like it's a crappy game to have to get in the middle of.
Oh, for sure.
And you can tell he's really tried to obviously recruit from high school, and they've had what, 3 Big West freshmen of the year in a row.
Yeah, and that's even the thing. He doesn't even have really a lot of JC guys. Right, so, right.
Which is kind of, again, kind of interesting given his comments that day. But yeah, Fullerton's a school that you would generally think, man, that's a transfer heavy school. You know, Fullerton, Long Beach, a lot of the Cal States you would think of as being way more transfer heavy, but except for Cal Poly, and Cal Poly has, you know, probably over half their roster, I think, is either junior college or Division I transfers at this point. So, kind of interesting how everything gets constructed, and it's interesting to see that they have 3 guys committed for 2 spots right now too, if you do the math on it.
Correct. Yeah, which is kind of interesting. And I think honestly, and that's something we'll talk about, I'm sure, as the season goes on and we get towards the end of the season, but I have a feeling that it might not just be 3 that they end up with that are new players. So
yeah, you never know. I mean, Joe has said to me before about, you know, attrition being, you know, just talking about organizations in general, you know, attrition being healthy sometimes and stuff like that. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see kind of how that turns over, how that works. And because the team certainly has a lot of kind of roster needs, if you want to just think of it as like an NBA GM.
Yes.
The kids are all kids who you can tell Joe really likes being around, and the coaching staff really cares about and likes, and feels like they, you know, they do everything they ask them to. But when it comes to just, you know, straight up roster construction, you know, there are definitely some things that you saw, you know, even at the beginning of the season, whether it's, you know, front court depth or, you know, whatever, that, you know, that's just kind of make Cal Poly's roster a little bit weird. So we'll see if it gets a little less weird. We'll see how it gets a little less weird. I think the guard that's coming in, not Daxton, but J.R. Ballard, looks really, really good. In the stuff that I've seen, he seems like a guy who will come in with confidence on the offensive end. And then the other guy might be more like a Mark Crow kind of a player, where he might sit out for a year. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know that for sure, but you know,
well, you got to figure with both those guys. And again, trying to make a positive and a negative, both those guys, if you're looking at this Cal Poly roster, you've got to expect that you're going to compete right now. Yeah, to play, yeah. Not necessarily a start, but to right. play meaningful minutes.
Yeah.
Obviously Isaiah James is playing big minutes, especially as we get in the conference play for that team. So
yeah, why not?
Is something for those guys to look forward to. That Cal Poly is going to need at least one of those guys to come in and really play legitimate big time minutes. So.
And the big man from
Finland. From Finland, which, again, is going to have to. We don't know much about, but he's the same story. Yeah. So
he was listed at 6'9", 205. I was trying to picture that.
That's a pretty thin guy. So
I was 205 the summer after my senior year of high school, and I'm 6'1.5", and I wasn't big. So anyway, that'll be interesting to see.
We're gonna need to get him off the Finnish diet and get some cheeseburgers or something. Get him at Chris Holder's weight room. So.
Less fish, more meat. I don't know.
Yes.
So yeah, any other thoughts about Big West ball this week? Any upcoming games that are exciting for you besides the Cal Poly games?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, we'll be watching that Cal Poly game closely. Again, it's an interesting week at the top of the conference. Maybe not so much with Irvine, but Santa Barbara goes to Long Beach, which they kind of traditionally consider a rival, which is going to be an interesting matchup.
Kind
of
Big
them.
West then, Blue Bloods, yeah.
Yeah, and then they're back at home. We barely even touched on it, but they had that big win against Davis and the two teams. We talked about Davis, but really didn't talk about Santa Barbara, the two teams that are top of the conference. Santa Barbara, Jalen Canty is now out and on a team suspension of some sort.
Really?
Yeah. So there's
what is
some
happening?
Question.
What is happening to the good players in the crazy. Big West right now? Like,
yeah, with Maneki being out, it doesn't sound quite as serious as Maneki. If you remember correctly, Jalen Canty had some academic issues last year that led him to miss the back half of the season,
right.
And maybe cost Bob Williams his job. But so that's going to be interesting to see if Canty comes back at some point. Obviously, a Santa Barbara team without Canty, it's not as huge a loss for them as Maneki is for Davis, but it's still a very big loss.
Yeah, it makes them vulnerable, that's for sure. And
yeah, inside, definitely.
And when you see Canty and Maneki, and then like when that same night that I heard Maneki was out, or maybe the night that I heard Canty was out, there was somebody else who wasn't playing, and also the Fullerton guys didn't start, Ahmad or...
that was some kind of...
Or Allman, kind of a message.
He was doing, yeah. Yeah,
but I was like, oh my God, like what's happening right now? It was like a moment.
Yeah, and like you said, like, it is that time of the Big West where it's the grind, and maybe guys are slipping up a little bit.
Grades are in from last quarter or last semester.
Yeah, grade-wise. So, but that's going to be interesting to see with Canty, and then obviously, you know... No matter what, even with or without those two guys, Canty and Maneki, a Davis Irvine game is a big time game. So
Davis Santa Barbara, yeah,
come right. Or Davis Santa Barbara, correct. Yes. So that game on Saturday night is going to be, I think, a real interesting game as well. So right.
And it kind of leaves that door open for Irvine as a team who has some relative stability. At least that's how I perceive them.
Absolutely.
Terms of who they are and what they do, being able to have that consistency and continuity throughout the season, that's a team that you wouldn't also want to, you know, that could very easily win three games in a row and just kind of do their thing, you know, with Russell Turner there. So a lot going on. I think there's, what, 2.5 weeks left in conference play. There's still a lot to be decided before the Big West tournament that starts that, I think it's that second weekend in March. But if you have content or things that you want us to talk about, for sure, let us know if you like the podcast, if you think we should talk about more about a team or two. I know we kind of skimmed over Santa Barbara the last couple weeks because they're just the de facto number one at this point. And we've been kind of talking about kind of the middle upper echelon a lot of the Big West. But if you think there's some teams we should talk about more, let us know. If you think there's some topics we should talk about more, let us know. We like to hear from you guys. So you can follow Nick Wynn at Nick Wynn with the E at the end, W-Y-N-N-E. On Twitter, if you would like. You can follow me at Fansmanship. You can also find the pictures that I take at photos.fansmanship.com. And if you want me to take pictures at a sporting event or a event in general, hit me up. I'm up for it. And I'm, you know, the stuff I take is fun and good, and I have a good time with it. So I hope you guys, you know, get a chance to look at those photos and see, you know, some of the stuff that's going on locally here in high school and college sports. We have some good high school stuff coming up this week with Mission and Slow. Actually, tomorrow night as we tape this, it's Tuesday night right now, but tomorrow night Mission and Slow are both at home for CIF playoff games. So that'll be fun to take a look at as well here in San Luis Obispo. And Nick, any final words?
Go watch some curling. We have not converted this podcast to a curling podcast just yet, but definitely go watch some curling. It's the best time of the year, or best time of the 4 years to go watch some Olympic curling. So
we have Shot Rock here, you know, at the Fansmanship Burn the Breeze podcast. So don't sleep on it. We definitely think you should watch curling. I actually was in a curling club. I told Mike Abram that on the radio last night, that I belonged to a curling club in Colorado Springs, and it was a good time. And I would definitely highly recommend that you check it out. It's got some intrigue to it. There's some strategy, and it just takes one bad shot. It's kind of like kind of like a good football game where there's good defenses on both sides, and you say, you know, who's gonna blink first, who's gonna make that one big mistake, and you know, we'll see who that is and what that looks like when it comes to the curling at the Olympic level. It's the highest level that it is. And again, we're not going to turn it into a curling podcast, but you should go watch it.
Not yet.
Let us know what you think. Yeah, not yet. We're trying to get down to the Big West tournament too, so let us know if you're going. If you want to make a donation to our travel fund for that, you can send it to Owen at fansmanship.com on PayPal, and that would be pretty rad because Nick and I are both trying to make it down there. We're trying to do a live from the Big West tournament podcast, which would be pretty radical too. So we're working on all that as well, making plans to get down to Anaheim if possible. So if you want to help us do that, we'd be much obliged. And you know, if you want to have a beer with us across the street, there's a pretty sweet little pub there across from the pond, across from Honda Center, and we'd be happy to chat with some people over there as well if that's something you're up for. All right, It's getting late, Nick, and I appreciate your time this week, and we'll catch you next week on the Burn the Breeze podcast.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Signs out on the streets direct me running back.